through the Ksuba, and there is some supplementary material that I gave you. I'm sorry I didn't send it out to you whenever I sent the stuff out, which was the nusach of the Ksuba, or the parts of the Ksuba that are preserved in the Mishnah itself. So I want to first start by the reading of the Ksuba, and then we will go to the clauses that we don't write in our Ksuba, even though they're technically binding. All right. Firstly, we're going to read the Ksuba slowly, and I will point out that I've given you correct vocalization. And when you read a Ksuba, Professor Bernstein told me that the first time he was asked to read a Ksuba, he went to his father, Ramichael Bernstein Zichrono Levracha, who was a Rosh Hashiva and a professor in Revelin, and he said, Abba, how do you read a Ksuba? So his father said to him, the way you read a Ksuba. There's a certain cadence and rhythm the way you read a Ksuba. So anyway, there's a classic way you read it. So you can read it classically, and you could read it, vocalize it correctly, and still read it classically, provided that you don't always put the accent in the correct place, because there's a way you read a Ksuba. So that
is it the Ashkenaz way, or is it?
I apologize, Eli. You know, there I have great reverence for Sephardi culture, but I don't know how they read a Ksuba. The only thing I remember was once at Ezra Sutton's wedding, I liked so much the way they did the Sheva Brachos. They didn't call people down to the chuppah. I mean, it may differ. This was a citizen deal. I know different communities and maybe even the same community differently. What? I don't remember what the shul was it was in, but I remember that they just told you to come down. They didn't call people down to their titles, because you have to call people down and announce them with their titles. You can offend people because he got this title. Someone just told me, one of his best friends told me, just come down to the chuppah, you know, before, and we were underneath the chuppah, and they were passing the cup around making brachas, and they got to me for the fifth or sixth bracha, and I just felt bad. I said, apologize, but here's the Ashkenazim, because the nusach, just the way they sing the bracha, was totally different. So I was the one Ashkenazi person there. They all laughed. Yes, I know it's a little different. So, but in terms of nusach, the nusach is similar. In fact, if you want to see, I'll mention this later. The Sefer Ashtoros for Haigon, there is a nusach ksuba there. I'll talk about actually something I was looking at this morning that's relevant. I know the Syrian ksuba. The wedding didn't happen, but it was a broken engagement. I was supposed to be a Saudi kiddushin for a student who was Syrian, and the Syrian ksuba has in it, after the sort of the standard stuff, it has the promise that he makes her that he won't marry another wife without the permission of the Beit Din Sedek in Damascus or something like that, and then also that he won't be Megaresh Bal Karcha. So in other words, this, because the Sfaradim aren't bound by the Charam Rabbeinu Gershom, but it's sort of included in the Ksuba. So I don't know, maybe the Beit Din Sedek at Damascus still gives permission to take a second wife. But what's that?
It's not reduced to Rabbeinu.
That's right. So there are differences, but the Ksuba conception it stems from the same place, and it's very similar. Okay. So anyway, the Ksuba starts with a date. This is actually a real Ksuba, but the names have been changed. I suspect my student wouldn't have minded, but everything but the names are the original Ksuba. B'chamishi b'shabes shiva v'esrim yom l'chodesh mar cheshvan. You'll hear this from me. My students who've been with me before know that if one day I wind up in an insane asylum, I'll be that guy who's running around every building and everything and a race and sticking in Mar when they leave out Mar and Mar Cheshvan. So when Mar Cheshvan begins, someone will remind me and I'll give you the spiel then. But the name of the month is Mar Cheshvan, or in the original Mar Achshvan. Okay. I will need that.
I know, but until we do.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. Most days I don't need it. I just hope that you don't log me out by that, because I'm crazy. Okay, you don't. It's fine. It's been a little on the fritz. So, okay. Shnas chameshes alafim shrameyos v'shivim mushtayim levrias olam leminyan. Now again, I know it doesn't really matter whether or not the world is more than 6,000 years old, which it most certainly is. But all that matters is the way we count. In fact, we don't count the way Chazal counted, nor the way the Gaonim counted. The original count in the period of Chazal, as best as we can tell, and you see this in some of the Gaonic documents as well, they counted Lamin Hashtaros, which was to the invasion of the Middle East by Alexander the Great. So I think it goes back to something like 332 or something like that. You can figure it out. It's not hard. There is also a discussion in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah in the first parak where they would count to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. When you look in the beginning of the Igeres of Rav Shuragon, I believe you'll see the dating is Lamin and Hashtaros. Today, we count to the hypothetical Briasa Olam based upon counting the number of years mentioned in Bereshis. So it makes absolutely no difference how old you think the world is, as long as the Dayanim know what the writer of the Shtar means. When he wrote the Shtar, that's all that matters. Leminyan she'anu monin kan. The word monin, and I remember Rav Melech Shechter, Zichrono Livracha, Rav Shechter's father, who I was one of my rabbeim in smicha. So when we learned a little bit of Eben Ezer, and he went spoke about the ksubas, he pointed out the word monin. The tradition is to spell it chaser, for a very strange reason. It's not a convincing reason, but I might guess that maybe some scribe some point left it out, and they just left it that way, or he thought it was a cute, you know, it was cute when it was unvocalized that leminyan she'anu monin, that somebody could get confused. But the reason that he said was that if you read it with a vav, then you might think, I don't know why you would think this, that there's a word monim which means to make fun of or to torture, you know, umas olam monin es Yisrael, like lashon ona'a. So why you're more likely or less likely to think that without a vav, with or without a vav, I don't know, but that's the way we spell it. We spell it chaser, monin. Khan, this was cluster by Medinas, New Jersey. Some people don't bother writing the state.
What's cluster?
Cluster. It's a town in Bergen County. It's it's about 3 or 4 or 5 miles from Teaneck or so. Okay, it's northeastern Bergen County. Anyway, now I usually this vocalized version doesn't have it, but I normally write in the ksuba now. I didn't always anan sahadeh many shtaros. And you look at the original schaos. So remember that a ksuba is written belashon belashon ha'edim. A get is written belashon habal. When you read a get, the get is the voice, the first person of the husband speaking. And it's signed on the bottom by the Edom. If it were written in the husband's ksav yad, midoraisa, you don't even need Edom on the bottom, because ksav yad, though, is kamei Edom. If his handwriting is recognizable, but a ksuba is not written as if the husband's speaking, it's written as the Edom who witnessed the kiddushin. So anan sohadei, we are witnesses, and that's another example, by the way. We write sohadei with the samach in biblical Hebrew. Sohadei is written with the sin. How do you know that? Yigar sohadusa is with the sin. Anan sahade eich shabachar Avram Yitzchak ben Rav Yaakov Ruvain lemishpachas Goldberg. Amar la. Now Amar, by the way, for those of you who are not familiar with Aramaic grammar, is the past tense in Aramaic. Omar in Aramaic is the present tense. That's very confusing, because in Hebrew Omar is the past tense and Omer is the present tense. Anyway, in this case they're testifying that such and such a person, Amar la lahada besulta. Now the word, now la, what is the pronoun la? For those of you, maybe if you took any, who took Targumim here with me? Anybody? Is Adin here? He was here. Yeah, Adin, I think he's the only, is he the only one? Okay. You guys know what an anticipatory pronoun is?
I mean, you can figure it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have only three in Chumash, to the best of my knowledge. Vatiftach, Vatirehu, Es Hayeled. There's a medrash on that. There's also Yevi'eha, Es Trumas Hashem. And then finally, Vayitain Lahem Moshe, Livnei God, Livnei Ruvain, Lachatzi Shev, Menashem Yosef. What's an anticipatory pronoun? Well, translate the following from Yeshua. Amar Le Abaye L'Rava. Yeah, what's the Le? He said to him, Abaye T'Rava. You would have, the Le is what's called an anticipatory pronoun. It's very rare. It's found, but it's rare in biblical Hebrew. It's exceedingly common in Aramaic, and especially Rabbinic Aramaic. I can, in the Targumim, it has a limited function. In the Gemara, it's all over the place. Ashkeche l'Rav Ploni. What do you mean? What's the Ashkeche? He found him, pronominal suffix there. What do you need that for? That's the way it's done. All over the place. Once I point it out to you, every line you're going to read, every other line in Gemara is going to have one. You might notice it now. So Amar La, he said to her. Now who's the La? La Hadab the Sultan. What?
He's translating without.
What's that?
I mean, that's why I'm used to translate.
Correct. In other words, you don't even think about it anymore. But now that I pointed it out to you, you might go back and you might notice some of them.
I've noticed them throughout the time, but I can do translations.
That's good.
I do little translations. It's very frustrating.
It's very
frustrating when you realize that we just wouldn't use that phrase in English.
Correct. That's the nature of language. That's all. Different languages. So he said, Lahada besulsa. And now if she's not a besulta, we write in other things. We write in mitarachta, if she's a... What's litaracha? Tafresh chaf. Grusha, legaresh. What's that?
Oh, wow.
Tafresh chaf is mitarachta, is a grusha. What's that? I can't hear you. Don't be quiet. Okay. Then what's an armalta? Almana with the double liquid switch. Okay, you could write in, she's not a grusha almana, but everybody knows she's not a basula. You might write in either something like panuya or itita. woman. If she is assumed to be a besula, but the chassan knows she's not, you can write besulta in the ksuba as long as he knows. As long as there's no mekach tos, that's what you do in the ksuba. There's no mitzvah to be mevayish her barabim. You don't do something that's vade merci kishikra. So that's ridiculous. But once the chassan knows and there's no mekach taos, so then it's not an issue. So anyway, what? Vadai Mugasetz, you could do that. That already, there's some Tanaim, Rameir says she's entitled to it. So I'm not saying. I presume they would have written Besulta in there. I don't know. I don't know for sure. But anyway, as long as there's no deception, you know, unless it's obvious, then you could write that. I think Revuvo Shurlo writes in his. I only saw the first tshuva. Someone showed me the book. Elisa Tshuva's on the internet. So he writes, I think it's in the first tshuva, that he once had this case come in front of him, and he was a younger individual, and he said, look, can't write Sheker in the Shtar. And he went to some Haredi gadol who told him he was out of his mind, and of course you write Besulta. He's making that as a point. So if you write him whatever it is, Saraleya Bashimon Levi, again you can see how I picked the names. Lemishpachas Goldman, Goldberg's Mary Goldman. I couldn't think of a more generic Jewish name. Okay. Havili Leintu Kedas Moshe V Yisrael. So he said to her, now they're testifying. Now he said to her, Havili Leintu, which is be for me. Now into is an interesting word. How would you translate into? Well, I heard the English. What was the English? And what did you say, Danny? Correct. Into is an abstract pronoun. It doesn't mean le'isha. That would be le'itita. It's le'itu for wifehood. I don't know why. This is very common in the Targumim. When he takes a woman, le'isha, in our psukim we've done. You'll see, instead of le'itita, it's le'itu for womanhood, for wifehood. I don't know why. It uses the abstract noun instead of a simple object. That u vowel is the marker in general, Hebrew and Aramaic, for the abstract noun. For example, man no raha makom azeh, the Targum is dechilu, which is strange. It should have been dechila. You know, it's not how fearsomeness is this place. I don't know why. So it's just a feature of certain words in the language may get that. Benny, you had a question? Okay. So you know that you can write a shtar for the lova afal pishin malva emo. You can write a shtar for a lova and bring witnesses to sign it, say that so-and-so borrowed money from so-and-so. But it didn't happen yet. The answer is that once you're moserit, at that point, then it becomes effective. In this case, it becomes, in other words, the ksuba is only binding if they actually get married. At that point, the Edom testified, and that's fine. For the only shaila you would have, and I mentioned this the other day in Shir, maybe it was yesterday or at the end of last week, the shaila is, but what if they got married the next day? Well, then isn't there a problem with Shtar? The answer is no, because in this case, we say Edom b'chasum and zachon. The shibud starts when the Edom sign the Shtar, when the kinyan takes place, the Edom sign the Shtar, and it doesn't matter if they get married 3 days later, since they sign the Shtar that way, even though the marriage didn't take place, the kol is already yotzei of the shibud b'chasum. Okay, so Amar la b'sulta, Havilin to Kedas Moshe v'Yisra. Okay. And now the husband enumerates his duties of marriage. Va'ana. Now, this is one of my favorite. Eflach. Eflach or Aflach. Either one of those is fine. Okay. The Yemenites don't have a segol. They read both segol and patach as patach. So if you look at a Yemenite vocalization and the Yemenite targumim, all segols turn into patach. So it would be Aflach. Now, please, however, do not read Afalach as some people do. Because Eflach means I will serve or worship. Means he promises to serve or to work for his wife. Afalach means to enslave. Okay? Now, I know that there might be some people who think that way. However, that is not the Jewish conception of marriage. Okay? So, vana eflach, better to read it with the segol. Okay? V'okir, I will treasure, cherish. V'ezon, I will support, that's mizonos. Va'afarnes, which probably technically refers to ksus, and maybe other things, other general needs of marriage outside of ona.
Wait, what is kisut?
Clothing. Right? Sheir ksus va'ona. Let's assume that those are what the Torah enumerates as the obligations of the husband to this second wife. In other words, even if he takes another wife, he owes the first one, sheir ksus va'ona sa lo yigra. Okay, for those of you who did the Bekiyas, you already saw the different dais amongst the Tanaim, how you read those words. What?
Sheir
Zoona. Okay, right, different than, yes.
No, like,
yes, that is funny, that's correct. Okay, and ona is mezonos, right? Because she'er is she'er bisaro, and ona is ve'ini semes nashosechem or something like that. Okay, so anyway, now here, v'afarnes yosichi lichi, one of these words, the word lichi is probably extra. I don't know why it's there. It probably doesn't belong, but it's in our nuschos. Some take it out. And then v'afarnes osach. Okay, lichi, is the form ichi as an ending is just the Aramaic feminine. So kehilchos, which is the correct version, it's Aramaic, not hilchos, that would be with a vav in Hebrew. Kehilchos guvrin yehudayin, like in accordance with mishpat. In other words, it could be the laws or it could be the manner of. Or even the word kemishpat can mean kedechazi, as the Targum says, as is fitting. Of Jewish men, guvrin yehudayin, de polchin, umokrin, vizanin, umafarnish, and l'shem bekushta. It means you can't steal to fulfill your obligations to supporting your wife or to support your or her lifestyle. De bekushta, with honesty, with MS.
Would that be evidence that the text is lynching?
So just a note about the lamed. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Much drush has been said about this, but the pshuta shemikra is the lamed, is what the grammarians call the lamed accusative. It's just, in other words, there are certain verbs, you see this more in Aramaic. Ashkechei l'rav ploni. In Hebrew, normally we would say not matzah le, but matzah es. Right? But it's common even in biblical Hebrew, and certain verbs get it more so than others. So v'ahav very often, not always, often gets a lamed instead of an es. You even get alasher haragu le'avner, not haragu es avner. The normal form is es by harag, but sometimes you get a lamed. Once you open your eyes, you'll see this all over the place in biblical Hebrew, even more so in Talmudic Aramaic. So you get a lot of those lameds. So it's just, so really it is synonymous, you could get either one. That's why it's really a doubling. So v'yohevna lichi mo'ar b'sulaychi. We spoke about this, I think, in Shir at some point. I forget where it came up. V'yohevna is a contraction. It's very much a Babylonian form. It's v'yohev ana, and I am giving, as opposed to yehevna, which means we gave. That suffix na on a perfect on a past tense verb is anachnu. In the present, v'yohev with the kamatz, like the cholam in Hebrew. What? How do you say a Hebrew present tense? Omer. In Aramaic, it's Omar. That cholam, that kamatz gadol in Aramaic, going to cholam is what's known as the Canaanite shift. Shalom, in Hebrew, the cholam alei there, what's the word in Aramaic?
Shalom.
It turns into the kamatz gadol. And that kamatz never, so leave it at that. So anyway, yohevna is yohev ana, I give, I will give. Lichi, to you, moar b'sulaychi. So notice what is the term for ksuba, the ikar ksuba in our ksuba? The mohar. Moar b'sulaychi, if she weren't a b'sula, you would write in, you know, mitarachtaychi or amrulusaychi or something like that, whatever she was. Ksaf zuze mason. 200 zuzim of silver. Dachazi lichi mid'orayisa. What is chazi in Aramaic? Ra'oi, it's a passive participle. If it were an active participle, chaze, which means I see. Chazi is, it is seen. In Hebrew, think about it, ro'eh and ra'oi. Okay, kasuv in Hebrew is what in Aramaic? Kisiv. Chirik, a shva and a chirik. That's what chazi is. It's a shva, a chatapatach, and a chirik. The chazi lichi mid orayisa. Umizonaichi. Now, by the way, is the whole machlokas harishonim, right? Machlokas harishonim, where the ksuba is the raisa, the rabbanon, the maskana. How do we paskim? And Rabbeinu Tam appeals to the nusach of the ksuba. And those who say no, the reason why, even if it does say the chazi lichi midaraisa, that refers to the currency. In other words, even though ksuba is the rabbanon, you have to pay in the currency the raisa. And look at the last mission, I think, in ksuba, so about Moos Kapodakia. Zach? Why would you, if you said nothing, then it's ambiguous. If you say it this way and you're wrong, you've written sheker. No?
So why would you
Rabbeinu Tam says, because it's deraisa, so that's the proof. We wouldn't write it if it weren't deraisa. And the others who say it's only the rabbanon say, no, it means the kesef is deraisa. The chiyuv is the rabbanon. It's particularly odd, by the way, in light of the next line. Umizonaichi, uchsusaichi, visipukaichi, umeal labasaichi, or kalara, which are definitely daraisa. I'll translate those and comment on that in a moment. Yes, Mr. Kosowski.
So I was wondering, the whole thing is that it's supposed to be support, monetary support for the wife.
Yeah.
Right? 200 zuzim, I'm assuming, is worth a significant...
No, what's supposed to be meant? The 200 zuzim is if he divorces her or he dies. It's a severance payment. It's to discourage him from divorcing her because he's got to shell out a lot of cash up front. 200 zuz might have been a year's worth of support. Not more.
Yeah, but $200 isn't as much of a deterrent.
It's not $200.
$50,000.
Yeah.
Right. It's the equivalent today. Forgetting about in its day, it might have been the equivalent of $60,000. And let me give you a little tip. Just watching, unfortunately, when marriages dissolve and become acrimonious. If there's one thing that soon-to-be ex-husbands hate is having to pay a nickel to their soon-to-be ex-wives. So when the guy is going to have to pay out $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, it makes him think twice. Gail, what do you want?
Go ahead. I mean, the mitzvah actually brings this up and says that these two are probably possible. You might be doing
it, though. Okay, so even more so. Well, because that's okay, but Rabbeinu Tam's point would be that the fact that we write it this way shows that you're wrong, right? So I agree. That's why I said better not to write check here in the Ksupa. Agreed. Okay, fine. Now, mizonaichi, your food, ksusaichi, your clothing, sipukaichi, are other needs. If you learn the Gemara later in Ksubas, Bekias will do it. I think it's in the fifth or sixth parak. They talk about mizonos and then sort of a little bit of tosefest for her other tzarachim. That's probably what sipukaichi here is. Okay? In fact, if you had to translate a Hebrew word, I suspect that sipukaichi, the word would be tzarchaichi. Sipek lanu tzarkeinu bamidbar b'im shana. Umeya levasaichi, what is that? That's ona. That's lavo elayich. That's what it means literally. Ora kol ara. Okay, I'll say it very briefly. I won't give the whole spiel now. What is the word when we say only for newcomers, not third for me? When we say ol lebe midrasha, what does that mean? Ol lebe midrasha. Ayin lamed. Ringer. We've got a ringer here, Zach. Say it.
Entered.
It has nothing to do with go up into. Okay? The root is ayin lamed lamed. There is no root ayin lamed yud in Aramaic. The word to go up in Aramaic is salak. Samach lamed kuf. Or sometimes nun samach kuf. Masikana. Salaka daita chamina. The word in ayin lamed lamed in Aramaic, which sometimes one of the lamed isn't there, is to enter. It's the equivalent of Hebrew ba. Ba in Hebrew has two meanings. To come and to come into. Hashemesh yatsa al haaretz and kiva hashemesh. Yatsa means to go out because the sun comes out of its nartik in the ancient conception. The sun, when it sets, what does it do? It enters the rakia. Not what it does today, but what it did back then. Nishtanu atvayim, okay? So anyway, ayin laman laman means to enter. You know the term in the Gemara for Erev Shabbos? What's the term for Erev Shabbos? Male Shabbata. What is Male Shabbat? That means Knisas HaShabbos. And you know, what do we say for the end of Shabbos leaving? Motza'e Shabbos. It's the same. It's Ba and Yatsa are, in fact, antonyms, because Ba has two meanings. All right, yes?
So how would you say yod, like on Malchut Shamayim?
That's a ol?
Yeah.
That's a Hebrew word with cholam. Totally different.
So how would you say that in
Aramaic? Ula. That's probably with a shuruk, I believe. If it appears, if it is, Allah, la all, no, Nira. Nira is the Aramaic. It was last week's parsha, actually, and parsha of the Rufa, just a few psukim ago. Asher lo Allah, la the lo salak, Allah, Nira, I think is the word. Does the word near, it does appear, but not with exact shade of meaning. In Malchus, near is a term for Malchus.
In Aramaic.
And, you know, in biblical Hebrew. Look on Rashi on Vaniram Avad Cheshbon Adivon, which is a very difficult word. And I'll leave a near the base of it or something like that in the Vim Rishonim.
Rabbi Nachman makes the same point.
What?
Rabbi Nachman makes the same point.
Which Rabbi Nachman? What? Are you talking about Nachman of Breslov? I'm sorry. That, if you want to quote me that more Rav Nachman, that's fine. Okay. All right. So anyway. My canon closed with the Shulchan Aruch, almost. Fine. Now, that's what he said to her. Then what happened? Utsvias maras saraleya besulta dava havas leila into. What does tsvias mean?
Desired.
She desired. The word Eretz HaTzvi, sorry to disappoint you guys, it has nothing to do with gazelle. It means the land of desire. It's a synonym for Eretz Chemda. Okay, okay, here comes the alum who's going to speak
former,
his voice.
The former and rightfully disgraced Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel came to Eretz HaTzvi and made that mistake.
He thought it was the land of the gazelle. Okay, that's nice. There's a medrash on it. You can't say it's wrong. There's a drush on it that Eretz Yisrael stretches like the height of gazelle. But Tzvi means desire. It's Tzavei. It's really cognate with the Aramaic Tzavei, which means Aramaic. Okay, in fact, right. What's that? In fact, Aramaic, where does it appear? It's in your bio, I think. Eretz Tzvi. Tzvi hi lechol aratzos. What? In Aramaic, the word gazelle, the tzadi, is a test. Tavya. Because you can see in Aramaic there are two different tzadis. One, another, in Proto-Semitic it's two tzadis. Tzadi and a tes. What? No. No. Well, tzvi certainly. You mean ayol? Not ayol. Ayol. Ayol is a deer and a tzvi is a gazelle. Okay. Fine. Not katsvi v'chayol. Okay. You would correct someone that Baal Kori makes that mistake. Fine. Utsvias maras plonis besultato. V'havas leila into. She agreed to be for wifehood for him.
What's a tzvias?
That's the feminine. Tzvi is masculine. Tzvias. Yeah, you took Targum.
She
desired. She agreed. Tzavet. Now, v'deina dunya. This is the dowry. The han'alas leimi be'avor. This is what the Mishnayos talk about later. The stuff, the nichsei tzom barza and the other nechasim, the metaltim and the kesef she brings into the marriage. The han'alas is what? How would you translate in Hebrew? It's the same ayin lam and lam root. How would you translate in Hebrew? Hichnisa. She brought in.
What
binyan is that? Afel. It's biblical Aramaic. It's a hey instead of an aleph. What? Oh, it doesn't assimilate. It happens in biblical Hebrew. Mahan zikin. Do damage. The nun doesn't assimilate. My Aramaic professor at NYU many, many years ago was joking with Professor Naomi Grunhaus, who teaches at Stern. We were in the same, must have been the same class. So she had little children at the time. So he said, you can call them Mahanzikin if you want. We normally call them Mazikin. But little Mazik. So you can call them little Mahanzik. Okay? So that's the biblical Aramaic form. The hay instead of an aleph. Typically it's a hafel. And very often nuns don't assimilate. Targum Yonah son ala Torah often artificially reintroduces that nun. And in fact, sometimes even nuns get created even in late biblical Hebrew that never existed, like Torah u'madda. Why is there a dagesh chazak in the dalad? That word madda is from Divrei Hayamim. Why is there a dagesh chazak in the dalad? The root is yada. Where's the nun coming from? It's an artificial infix nun.
It's an artificial nun because there's no nun in the Shoresh.
Wait, in what Shoresh?
I am
I'm sorry about that. I take that back. Yes. But I think that's no. So sometimes you get a nun. Take the word salak. You get a nun at the beginning. That is probably why. In other words, in lieu of that lamet, sometimes it appears. I have to think about it. It's a good question, Skutsky.
Where did you get Torah?
Yeah. Well, again, so that's what we call then a bi form that emerges from ayin lamet lamet. You have this in Chumash. You have the, even for example rakak, right? V'yareka b'fanav. Who comes Yud Reish Kuf? You have a lot of situations. This is disputed, but the Kasher Zamam Lasos Kol Asher Yazimu Lasos. Some have suggested Steiner suggested Yazimu is not a past tense. So in the root of Zion Mem, but I'm not convinced in context. But okay, but Yaraka undoubtedly is Yud Reish Kuf. No, that's the standard. That way you lose the second one. Skutsky. Well, not that phrase is not there, but the word madah, chachma u'madah, nosati lach, in Divrei Yamin Beis, I think when God speaks to Shlomo there. Right? The word madah appears, and there should be no dagesh nadal, because there's no nun. So, the magically appearing nuns. It's a day nedunya, the han'ala sleimi be'avua. For some reason, we write be'nasha if she's not a besula. I don't know why. Be'avu, from the house of our father. Be'im b'chsaf, be'im b'dahav. Now here is, if you're reading Iksuba, some people write in the Iksuba, Zahav. If it's Zahav, then it's be'im b'chesaf, be'im b'zahav. This document is a mix of Hebrew and Aramaic. It should be readily apparent from different parts of it. But if it's Dahav, then you read Ksaf, the Aramaic vocalization. If it's Zahav, then you read Kesaf. Be'im b'chsaf, be'im b'dahav. Be'im b'sach shitin, jewelry maybe. Be'mane delvusha, kalim of wearing, and shimushe dira, and shimushe da'arsa, furniture and beds. This is the stuff that she brings in, and he promises in the event of divorce that he has to pay that money out. Hakol kibel alav Avram Yitzchak hasandanan b'meza kukim kesef tzarif. Now, in Sephardi ksubas, the one I've seen, they often write different amounts. And if you look in the Sefer Ashtaros or Haigon, he tells you you're supposed to evaluate it and write in the proper amount. I don't want to go into this issue now, but when you learn the Mishnayos later in the Masechta, so you will see that they talk about when the wife brings in cash into the marriage that the husband now assumed control of, he has to pay out a premium upon divorce, a 50% premium, assuming that he could use it to make money. That's the idea. When she brings the metaltalin, so apparently they would inflate the value of the metaltalin at the time of the emission because it sounded nice. We pretended it was worth more, but he would write in Pachos Chomesh. There's a question as to why that is. So we, in the Ashkenazi Ksuba, don't even bother. We just make up a number. He accepts as the value. You know, I agree this is worth 100 Tzukukim Kesa. Utsvi Avram Yitzchak Hasandanan. Now, again, the word svi here means desired. One of my students who got married a few years ago, so I always give them, when I'm a sadar, I give them the ksuba to look over, really for their names. But his kala read over the ksuba and said, I think there's a mistake, because his name was Tzvi Yaakov, I think. So it read, Utsvi Tzvi Yaakov. She said, I think it's a mistake, a duplication. So I said, very good eyes, but that's not actually correct. The word, those tzvis mean two different things. One is a name, but the first one is the verb. The tzvi, the masculine form of utsvias. Utsvi Avram Yitzchak Hasandanan, he agreed. Now, this is a very interesting. V'hosif lam in dila, delay, od mea zekukim kesef tsaruf, acherim kinegdon. Corresponding to what? The 100 zekukim kesef she brought in. Sacha kol masayin zekukim kesef tar. Now, if you read this, the way it is formulated in our ksubos, it seems pretty clear to me. This is not what the Mishnah talks about as tosefes ksuba. This is Tosefes al Nadunya. It's not done in a manner that the Mishnah describes. The Mishnah did not have him double the amount of the Nadunya. It was 50% more on the cash, 25% less on the metaltalin. So I was wondering about this. I asked Reshechter this morning. So he thought this was, in fact, he was reading, he said he didn't see that clause. I guess he forgot it came afterwards. He said there's something missing here. I said, no, the Hosef Lamidila is later. And that's standard in Ashkenazi Ksubas. So he thought it's Tosefes Ksuba, but as what I thought it would have been, but when you read the Nusach, it sounds like it's an addition on top of the Nedunya. Tosefes Ksuba has nothing to do with the Nedunya. Tosefes Ksuba says, according to the Mishnah, beginning of the fifth parak, and you did it in the Bekiyas for last week, Tosefes Ksuba means the minimum amount of Ksuba is Manar Masayin. If the husband wants to promise her more, because he's trying to convince her to marry him, so I'll give you 1,000 Zuzim, not 200, he can do so, and it's binding. That's called Tosefes Ksuba. It's nothing to do with the Nadunya. The Nadunya is based upon property she brings into the marriage. It's related to that. So so the way this is formulated doesn't sound like it's Tosefes Ksuba. I looked in the Sefer Ashtaros of Haigon, and when you look there, he has the same order that we do. He also has, by the way, the Chazi Lichi Midaraisa, for those of you who are Rosen Zweigshire who are doing Suba Daraisa, unless that Nusach is bad, it's interesting because he's Gaonic and he has that Nusach, just what I saw at least in the Bar Ilan. But what's interesting is when you look at the Hosef Lamin Dila, so there it's not actually, it looks like it could be Tosefes Ksuba. It's not, I don't think there's a Sacha Kol, and it's not clear that he's adding on to the Nadunya, which could then be actually Tosefes Ksuba. And then the rest of the shtar is sort of boilerplate language of all shtaros when you create a shibud, because you know it says in the Mishnah, lo kasavla, those of you who have the Mishnah, the other sheet in front, pull it out for a moment, lo kasavla ksuba, besula gova masayim v'almana, manam neshu tani beisdin, it doesn't matter whether he wrote a ksuba or not, he's chayiv. Kasavla sadesh shavim mona tachas masayim zuz, if he wrote for her a field, he was meshabed a specific field to her, almost like what we would call the deyaitiki. Not a diaitiki. What's it called? What's the Aramaic term? Aputiki. Apotekoi. It's not the real etymology, but it's Chazal's etymology. An aputiki on this field, but my field is only worth a mana. It doesn't matter. She gets a shibud on anything. What did he not write? V'lo kosav kol nichsin de isli acharayin l'ksub sich chayiv shutanai beisdin. So now in our ksuba we write in the standard language of a shibud nechasim. So we write, the Chach Amar Avram Yitzchak Hasandanan. I put in quotes here for you. We don't put in quotes in the Ksuba normally. More impossible, the Ksuba. Achrayish Tar Ksubis Oda. The Achrayish, meaning he's being Meshabit, is Nechasim. of this ksuba, of the ksuba, the ikur ksuba, nidunya dain, the dowry, visosef, the da, dain is masculine, da is feminine. So the achrayis of these three things, the ksuba, the nidunya, and the tosefta, kabalis alai, I accepted upon myself, not probably kables, kabalis, it should be a pa'el. You know what, well, I don't know what kabalis is. You know what kabalis is? It means I complained. Okay? I don't know what kabalis is. You know what kabalis is, actually? I know now. It's in a biblical Aramaic form. Unitalasni ruach, what's the next word? Don't root it, Shlayan.
What?
That's fine, too. But most of the Siddurim say Vishamis.
They do?
Yes. Korin's Siddur, I noticed, got it correctly. Shamis is biblical Aramaic for the first singular form. Good Targumic Aramaic is Ushmais. Okay? Ushmais. That's the correct form. I think Saxeter got it correct. Ushmais, so it should be Kabalis. If it were Kal, Binyan Kal, which it's not, it would have been Kibalis. Kivalis. If it were Aramaic, biblical Aramaic, it would have been Kables. Kavles, probably, without a Dagesh. But Kabalis is the correct form. Alai, upon myself. V'al yorisai bosarai, which means upon my yorshim after me, meaning there's a shibud on the estate. The yorshim don't have to pay the ksuba unless the father leaves nechasim. Lehispira, to make payment. Mikol shvar arag nesem mikinyonim. Shvar means choice. Arag means choice. The word doesn't exist as far as I can tell in rabbinic literature except for in conjunction with shvar arag. It's in Shtaros. I do a Bar Ilan search and it's the only place it comes up. When I looked in the comprehensive Aramaic lexicon, which I didn't bring up here for you, the Cal website, which is the cheap, free version of the very expensive offline dictionaries that Sokolov put out. So the Cal website, Arag is choice. Okay, it always comes up with Shvar Arag. Don't know why the duplication. Shvar Arag, Nichsin V'Kinyonim. I don't know why you need nechsim v'kinyanim. They're the same thing also. Sometimes what you get in shtaros, by the way, is an amalgamation of nuschos, and that may be where this phrase comes from. I don't know. Now, there is one odd thing about this. What's odd about saying shvar nechsim v'kinyanim in the ksuba? What does a woman collect her ksuba from? Ziboris. In Medina the Gemara, a woman does not collect her ksuba from anything but Ziboris, and she doesn't collect it from a Taltam. I forget where I just saw quickly this morning, someone suggests the reason why the Nusach was put in a Shvar Agnissim Mekinyanin is because it's a very famous Takan of the Gaonim that a woman could collect her ksuba even from a Taltam, which obviously indicates Jews are moving away from being landowners and agricultural society towards a commerce-based society. So the Gaonim were Mesakin that a woman can collect her ksuba from a Taltam, and you know that all Metaltalim are considered Metav. You guys learn Bava Kama, anybody? All Metaltalim, why are Metaltalim considered Metav? Mati? Because they're easy to sell. If you can't sell it here, you take it there. The problem with land is that if the land is, you can't find buyers here, you can't pick up the land and move it to the next town to sell it. Okay? So anyway, some suggest that's why we write in Shvar Nisachyanim that it's Metav, that it's Idis. Because Ksuba Mitachkanas Chachamim is only Minaziboris. There's Idis, Beinonis, and Ziboris. Idis is the choice land, Meitav. Okay. Beinonis is medium quality, and Ziboris, I don't know what the etymology is, Ziboris is the worst quality land.
Oh, okay.
So Ksuba, if a woman is coming to collect from her husband or from the estate, if he died, and there are different qualities of land, she collects from the worst quality. If there's only one type of land, she collects from whatever's there, even if it's Idis, even if it's the best kind. Fine. Now, here is a very controversial, conceptually speaking, clause. The kinai, which is short for the tough falls off, the kinais. Ksavis means I wrote. Kinais is I bought. Tufts drop like flies in Babylonian Aramaic at the end of the words. So do other letters, like the word bays, for example, and the word tu. The word tu is short for tuv. Okay, tufts and bases, and I forget what other letter. Cuffs, I think, also drop like flies at the end of Babylonian Aramaic words.
Say
what?
Batal Marant. Those
are the words. Okay, good. Who do you take, Steiner?
No, my brother.
Your brother. Okay, you took your brother. No, but he taught you. Good. Okay, his brother, who was my former share assistant, but I won't claim credit for his brother's Aramaic. Okay, fine. the kanoi that I bought, which means what does that mean? I own it now. Uda'as uvida asir ano lemikne, which I will purchase in the future. Why is that a problematic clause? Davar shelo bala olam. The principle that seems to be employed in shibud, it's a machlokas arishonim, but the way the Ritva and many rishonim explain, is shibud nechasim is a kinyan. It's a mixas kinyan. In other words, I am mach, in a sense, when I borrow money from you, you are making a kinyan al tanai all of my nechasim, that if I don't pay you back, you take that becomes yours now. And that's why even when I sold it to someone else, the malveh can go and be torah if he can seize it from the person who bought it later because he bought it first. That's the idea of shibud is a mixas kinyan. So the controversial part of the asid and vida asid an ala miknei is how can I be mishabe nechasim? How can I make a kinyan to you, give you a partial kinyan on something I don't own yet? It's being machne davar shelo bala olam. It's the sugya in Shas.
So there's no concept of mishabe davar shelo bala olam?
What's that?
Is there a concept in Shas of mishabe davar shelo bala olam?
Well, the problem is how can you do that? Normally, not right. In other words, there is no such concept. No, this is the whole discussion about this issue was discussed. But as a general principle, no. You know, normally it can only work if you can be machne something tangible for what it will produce. In other words, being machne dekel lepeirosa might work because the dekel is ba'olam. But here, you're talking about things that literally do not exist. That exist in the world. They don't exist in my possession at all. Right. There may be a difference between davar, which is not in my rishus, and davar shalabolam bechlal. Right? In other words, there's a sugya, you know, there are a number of sugyas that deal with this issue. But anyway, that's why it's conceptually interesting. Nichsin de islahon achrayus, the leslon achrayus. What are nichsin de islahon achrayus? Karka. The leslon achrayus, metaltalin. You're being meshabed in the ksuba, shibar aguf. Those things you still owned, you're metaltalin. And again, this looks like it's a post-Gaonic edition. It would make no sense for this to be in the Gemara. Okay? Kulahon. What's that? Well, that's why you put it in. Is you wouldn't? Well, no. You
does it apply without if you don't put it in the
ksuba? Oh, you probably would apply. Yes, but if right, you're right. Technically, before the going to takana, if you wanted to mishabed it, maybe you could do it. You're right. So I don't know. Maybe it certainly if it reflects the din, it's post gonik. If not, it was somebody promising the sky. Kul lahon yahon achra'in. I'll just say this. Forgive me my one grammar thing. 2 points to anyone who can tell me the only place in Tanakh where the word kol appears and it's a kamatz gadol, not a kamatz katan. What? The word kol, which is the proclitic form of kol with cholam, all of, is a kamatz katan. That's why when it gets a pronoun at the end, it becomes kullo. Okay, it becomes a kubutz. There's only one place in Tanakh where you have the word kol with a kamatz gadol. And I noticed this only because there's a funny Gemara in Shas by Mayim Achronim, kol milchamai. And kol there doesn't mean all salt. It means if he measured salt. V'chol b'shalish afar ha'aretz.
Where's
what? Kol milcha?
Yeah.
Chulin kuf heyamid beiz, I think. Kuf heyamid beiz. It's a sugi mayim achronim. But in Tanakh, v'chol b'shalish afar ha'aretz. In Yishaya, I think it's Yishaya Mem or something like that. God contained, measured. B'shalish afar ha'aretz. Only God can do that. So, and what's that? No, that's not part of that speech, I think. That's a different speech. No, it just comes up. But when they read Haftaras Nachamu, you can have fun. If the guy is a Havara Sfaradit, and there's a difference between Vechol and Vechal, you know to correct them then. If you're Ashkenazis, you're not going to hear the difference. Okay. Anyway, so Kul Lahon, because that's the word Kol is Cholum Chaser. It shortens, it changes to a Kubutz. Kul Lahon Yehon Achra'in. They will be responsible for Arvo'in. They will be guarantors. Lifroa Minahon. All the Nechasim. Lifroa Minahon to pay back for them, to collect payment from them. Shtar Ksuptadan Adinian Damis Aseftada. Minai from me. Vafilum in Glimad Al Kasvai. That's a whole discussion. When you have a Lova, what can you collect from the shirt off his back? And the question of Misadruin Labalchov. It's a sugya in the 9th or 10th parak above Mitzia. Even from the shirt off my back. Bechayai and some nuschos of the ksuba rid of Amosi. That's really unromantic. So we say basar chayai. It's euphemistic. After my lifetime. Okay. Minyoma dinan from this day ula alam and forever. And now the edim revert to testify. Vachray shtar ksub sadana dunya demeso seftada. Kibel alav. Avram Yitzchak chasandanan. He accepted it upon himself. Kechomer kol shterek subos v'soseftos de nohagin bivnos Yisrael. He did it in accordance with Chomer is a hard word to translate. I don't think it means the stringencies. I'm not sure. Of all documents written subos and toseftos, which apply by the daughters of Israel, ha'asuyim ketikun chazal, which are done in accordance with the manner of or the decrees of chazal. It wasn't done in a manner of asmachta, which would mean probably without a kinyan here. Whatever that means. I'm not sure how that applies here, but tofes of ishtar is the boilerplate language. So what that means, I'm not sure in this context. And now the Edom testified to something very important. Ukinena. Now here, by the way, that not ending means what? Anachnu. It's not vikonena, if the guy reads it, has read it wrong. Vikonena means an I am buying or making a kinyan. Kinena is we made a kinyan. Okay? Now, technically speaking, typically it's not the Edom who make the kinyan with the chasan. The Masada Kiddushin today does, but it doesn't really matter. In other words, someone made the kinyan on behalf of the kala from the chasan. Now, let me just explain to you what happens at the tish when they make a kinyan. Who is giving what to whom in the ksuba? Who is giving to whom? The chasan is giving to the kala. He is giving her a lot. He's mishabed all in the chasan and promising these things. What is she giving him in exchange for that? Nothing. Well, really what she's giving him, and maybe a kinyan shouldn't be necessary, is marriage. However, to avoid that particular question of whether it's a kinyan about nothing, to avoid that possibility, somebody gives the chasan on behalf of the kala a kli. So in exchange for the kli, he is meshabed himself. He's getting a kli, and in exchange he's giving the shibudim and so on. So as you may know from Tosas and Kiddushin in the first parak, I think it's the Chafav and Beis, you don't need the kala to actually give the kli. Someone can give the chasan the kli on behalf of the kala. So therefore, that's what the Masada Kiddushin is doing when he gives a kli. Yes, Danny?
So when the chasan hands over the shtar to someone the chasan hands over the shtar after he takes the kli,
He doesn't hand the shtar over. He doesn't actually physically. He's only to hand the shtar. The shtar is just a shtar raya, but the chasan agrees verbally. He commits himself to this. It's not an asmachta because they give him something.
So there's no like zafin or anything.
On behalf of the kal is really what they're doing. But yeah,
well, I'm saying who's being mizakeh.
We are acting on the kal's behalf to be kona these things, in effect.
Who specifically?
Whoever makes the kinyan with the chasan.
Okay,
on behalf of the kala. She has to agree. It's not zochin. It's not zochin because without her consent, she can't marry. You can't do it without her agreement.
Right.
Zochin normally doesn't require agreement. Spence?
Can we still do this?
Yes. What?
I didn't get a
clue. Well, maybe we better redo your ksuba. Okay. You're forgetting. You were in a daze, so you just have no recollection of it.
Didn't you use a shoe?
I always offer the chasan a shoe. One of my students, Tzvi Yaakov, actually took me up on the shoe. It was the first time. At the last wedding, even though my student had completed one marathon to date, he chose to not take me up on the shoe. But maybe if I brought him my sandal, he would have taken it. What's that? That's a kli. Baruch Hashem, you're married. No, it don't affect the ksuba. You'd be living in sin, but other than that, okay. Fine. Okay, so, Yamati? Oh, so the truth is, the Nadunya, really what you're there, it wouldn't really matter. In other words, she's not bringing it, you mean?
I'm saying it's written in this document, and he's giving a certain amount.
Well, presumably she brings it in at some point, or she gave it to him already. And even if she didn't, it doesn't matter, because it's like, even if she brought nothing, it's like writing Chayav Ani L'chamana B'shtar. And if I promise to give you wax, it's not binding. But if I write you a shtar that says, I owe you $100, and I borrowed $100 from you and I owe it to you, it's binding. Even if I didn't borrow the money from you. That's chayav ani l'chamana of b'shtar. Look in the 12th parak in our Masechta, I think. It's like I received it. Even if he didn't actually. If he did, if she gave it to him, then he's just recording it. That doesn't even require fundamentally a kinyan for the shibud. When he took the stuff, if he actually took physical possession, that's the kinyan. That's mechayav him to pay later. Right, maybe the chiyuv to pay extra is what you're. I'm not sure. You know what the kinyan would work for? Yeah, have I answered it?
Yeah,
sure.
Just like a weird idea. Like, couldn't this be a way to get away? Like, couldn't we do a double ring ceremony this way? Halakhically, one for nisyon and one for kedushin.
A double.
Because
it's chalipin.
It
becomes chalipin.
Yes.
Right.
So why don't you just do one ring for kedushin and one ring for nesuin when you do the ksuva, and you can get away with doing a double ring ceremony.
I mean, it doesn't.
Pen, use another ring, and that would be the kli.
You mean if you write a ksuva, then you could do that if you want.
And then you can get away with it.
Listen, I don't allow any kind of such a thing because of its association and so on, and because I, as much as my sympathies lie in a certain direction, I will not adulterate and even look like I'm adulterating the nature of Kiddushin, even if I were bothered by the nature of Kiddushin. That is what it is. You know, and therefore, so halachically speaking, yeah, you could also have her give her a ring afterwards, after you did a right mikudesh, just a minute later, and not formulas chalib, but just because I want to give you a ring. Right, you could do it there too. It's not; it wouldn't invalidate the kedusha unless it really were done as chalipin. But there's a reason why people wanted to stay away with it, because it's stemming from. Again, I'm sympathetic to the impulse. I understand why someone would be bothered by the one-sided nature of kedusha, especially if you know the Ran's Hesber in kedusha. But at the end of the day, I have to accept that this is what the halacha is, and therefore I don't like to do things. You know, where the halacha actually genuinely accommodates something as a real thing, just that we don't do it is one thing. But when you're trying to make it look like, well, we're doing it, but even if technically it doesn't validate the kedusha, I'm troubled by that. That's why I don't, you know, I don't. When I'm aside there, that, to me, that's out of bounds. But yeah, technically she could make the, you know, she could also give him the ring. She could send the ring to the tisha, and they could do it then, if you wanted. Right?
There's a ring of Klee.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And that ring, Nathan, can be owned by the Kala. Okay. Okay. Went over his head. We'll just leave it at that. Fine. Yes, I could have said it to you too. Okay. Anyway. So they now they say Ukanena. We made a Kinyan. Now I just want to make an observation here. There are many people in Makbid to leap out a letter in Ukanena. Why? Because the Kinyan hasn't taken place yet. So they don't want to write it until after the Eidah make the Kinyan. So as far as I'm concerned, I want to say a few things about this. Firstly, number one, Havel Havalim Amara Kohelas HaKol Havel. So I remember when I asked her, so I know when I was a Smicha student fourth year, and I probably missed this part of the fourth year, when Rabbi Bleich did fill in at the Ksuba, so I didn't realize that part, and so I didn't fill in the Vav on my Bechina. So Rav Druman Zichrono Bracha, I passed, but he just pointed out that I forgot to fill in the Vav. That was my mistake. Rav Shechtu told me once that he was did a Ksuba, and he forgot to fill it in, and Mikan Laba, he always fills it in advance. He doesn't wait for it, because there's absolutely no need. And you know why you know there's no need? Who asked me the question earlier about the Eidos on Benny, right? You're worried about saying that the Eidah made a Kinyan, they haven't made a Kinyan yet, okay? So what do? You wait for the Eidah to make the Kinyan, then you fill in the letter. Excuse me? This document says that they got married. It says he said to Arayat Mekudeshesli B'Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, and she said yes. And that hasn't happened yet. And that doesn't even happen until after the Eidim sign. So you're worried about writing before the Kinyan happened. The Kinyan must take place. And the letter must be filled in before the Eidim is signed, but the Ksuba will be possible. Okay? But the rest of it, it doesn't matter when the Ksuba is written. It matters when the Eidim sign. In fact, the Eidim signing doesn't even matter about the Maisa. But the Kinyan, which is the Ikar, that has to take place before the Shtar is signed.
And the Eidim sign before they do the actual Kiddushin?
Yeah. In Minhag Eretz Yisrael, or maybe it's been in Yerushalayim, I don't know, is that they do the ksuba under the chuppah, they sign it under the chuppah after they did the kiddushin, and then therefore it's not a kasha.
That makes sense.
Right? It does make sense on some level, but the minhag that I've seen everywhere, even Sephardi weddings I've been to here, that as far as I can tell, they sign to do the ksuba before, it doesn't matter. If they don't get married, the ksuba's not binding. What?
I do it under the chuppah.
Okay. You're Taimani. Okay. Anyway. Fine. That you could some leave off the leg of the kuf, some leave off the vav of ukanina. I write when I do ksubas, I do it in a nicer font, in a Sefer Torah font. This is what you get before. The only thing that's in handwritten on this on my ksubas are the Eidim signatures. Yeah, probably. I don't know. Some people I think do though. It makes no sense. It makes more sense to leave off the leg. Then it becomes uranina. I don't know what that means. We sang. That's not. I don't think that's an Aramaic word to sing. It's Hebrew, but not Aramaic. Ukanina min Avram Yitzchak ben Rabbi Yaakov Urvein lemishpachas Golber Chasan Daran Lamar Sarz Leib Hashem lemishpachas Gol Mesultada Kichol Ma Dechasuv Mforash Leel. That's Hebrew. Leel is Aramaic. Bimana Dechashar Lemikni Yaveh, with a kli that is roy to acquire with it, because we paskin that can't do chalipin with peros, you have to use a kli. Hakol Sharir Vekayam, a standard ending. Everything is valid and standing. That is the ksuba. You can hang on to this copy. If you're, one day you're ever called upon to read a ksuba, you'll have the correct vocalization. What I wanted to look at a little further, and this is why, Chaim, could you do the honors? Yamo. No, okay. Stand up. All right. I wanted to look at the nuschaos found in the Mishnah of certain lines that we don't put in our documents. There is, by the way, very little Aramaic in the Mishnah. The only complete Mishnahis in the Mishnah that are Aramaic are found, number one, in Pirkei Avos, even though the frame, and number two, Perakhes Mishnah Dal of Maseches Edrios, okay, which is the oldest extant fragment of rabbinic literature that I know. It's Yosef ben Yoezer, it's Yosef ben Yoezer's three statements, and they're in Aramaic. Okay, so now, but you do have some documentary or epistolary Aramaic, which is found in the preserved in rabbinic literature, and some of that is in the Mishnah. It's, other parts are found in Tosefta and elsewhere. And in the Mishnah, at the end of the fourth parak in Ksubas, we have a bunch of clauses in the Ksuba that the Mishnah states are binding, even if they didn't actually write them into the Ksuba. So, here what I've given you is Ksav Yad Kaufman, which is, this is on the, you can see the link here on top. It's the it's at the Hungarian one of the Hungarian universities or libraries that has David Kaufman's collection of manuscripts. He was a collector of Judaic and a scholar late 19th, early 20th century. So the most important Mishnah, probably one of the two most important manuscripts in the Mishnah, and it's complete, is Ksav Yad Kaufman in the Mishnah. It happens to be in the Kaufman collection, MS A50. Okay, so if you go to this website or you search online, Kaufman Mishnah Manuscript Hungary, you will get to this website, and it's MA50.
Can you bring down the screen?
What's that? Oh, yeah, sure. Please do. Okay. So. All right. And you may want to turn it. What? No. It's over there. Yeah, the bottom of the arrows. Okay, and why don't you turn off the light, a couple of first lights, so people can see better. Okay. Now, the nice thing about this, the Hebrew U website with the manuscripts has Kaufman also, but they're lousy photographs. These are unbelievably unbelievable high-resolution photographs with pin shot squinting. What I'm about to do is to get the really high-resolution form. It's unbelievable how clearly you can see it. I have the facsimile edition that friends purchased for me, the two volumes of Xavier Kaufman Home. These are much better photographs than even the printed edition. You can see the printed edition. The library has a copy. I think you can, I have two copies. You can even take it out. It's a cheap facsimile. But you want to see really high-resolution color photographs, this is where you're going to see them. They are simply unbelievable. I'm not going to talk much about the manuscript, but I want to step back. I actually do have to close this for a second. I want to go back to the previous page in the Mishnah. We'll look at the bottom. And we'll read them in the Mishnah here in Ksav Yad Kaufman. The vocalization, by the way, in Ksav Yad Kaufman was not from the original scribe. Vocalizing text was a lower profession than actually being a scribe in the Middle Ages. So you actually, what you have very often is the vocalizer vocalizes a different text, which provides you with two textual witnesses of the medieval period. In fact, there are five or six hands total in Ksav Yad Kaufman. But amongst them are the original scribe, the vocalizer. Some of the stuff added in the margins is not from the vocalizer. So I think they identify somewhere between four and six different hands in this manuscript. But the oldest part are the original consonantal text. So anyway, in this Mishnah, Lo kasav la ksuba besula gova masayim v'almana mana shu tanai beizdin. Kasav la sada shove mana v'tzachas masayim zuz lo kasav la Lo chasav la kol nichsin de isayin li achroin l'ksubasich chayev shu tnai beizdin. This, by the way, the reason why this manuscript is so important is not so much for its text. The other important manuscript, which I might have a minute to show you, Ksav Yad Parma 138, is probably a better text of the Mishnah, but it's the vocalization of Ksav Yad Kaufman that is so important in terms of knowing how rabbinic Hebrew was vocalized. Now, lo chasav la. The im tishtibayin, if you are taken captive, efriki nich, I will redeem you, parak. Va'asevi nich li, now I gotta go to the other page, I will return you to me. Li into, which means, Danny, for wifehood. Uva kohenes. Ach ziri nich. Limdintich. What do we have in the Mishnah, by the way? We don't have achzwinich. We have the other equivalent. What? Ahadrinich. Hadar and Chazar are cognate between Hebrew and Aramaic. The gutturals were very weak, so hey and ches switched, and dal and zayin, you know, are equivalent. Chazar and hadar are cognate. What this tells you, by the way, Eretz Yisrael Aramaic, Galilean Aramaic, which you see in Targum Neofiti, uses Chazar. Unklus doesn't Unklus uses, actually doesn't use Chazar. He typically uses Asev. You would use Asev Inich, but Bavli Aramaic is Hadar. And this represents, our text represents a Babylonianization of the word. Achasev Inich, Limdin Tich, Chayev Shu Tanai Bezdin. Skip down to Mishnah Yud. So that means if she's taken captive, he has to bring her back as a wife. And what if she's a Kohen? A Shvui is Asura the Kohen, so he has to redeem her, but he can divorce her in Perek Suba.
So it doesn't force him to become a Chalal?
What?
It doesn't force him, he can't be, we're not him agreeing to become a
Chalal. No, he's not allowed to.
Okay.
He can't. In other words, she's an Issa Daraisa to him now. Or, the Shui is the Rabbanon, actually. But if she had been Nivellis to one of our captors, Ba'ones, she would be Asura Lo, because he's a Kohen. Lo Chasav La, Benin Dichrin Di Yehavon Lich Minai. The male sons, that's Benin are sons, Benon are daughters. So Benin Dichrin are male sons. I haven't yet met any female sons or male daughters, but that's what the Aramaic idiom is. What? Be quiet. Excuse me. Gender is based upon genitalia, and those are biological realities. Okay, very. Thank you. These are male children, male sons. Benin dichrin di yavon lich minai di yirton yachsav subasich yoser al chulak hon di imachehon chayiv shutnai beisdin. What is ksubas benin dichrin? You're wondering what does this mean? Literally, it means the male sons that will be to you from me will inherit the money of your ksuba more than their share with the brothers. What is ksubas ben dichrin about? It only was relevant when a man had multiple marriages. Simultaneous or not, didn't matter if it was polygamous or not, or bigamous or not. It only mattered if he had two wives and children from each wife. If one wife brought in a large amount of money in her dowry, what happens when she dies? He inherits it, the husband. If another wife brought in a small amount in her dowry, and she dies, what happens? He inherits it. When he dies now, who inherits his property? His sons. But what if now you have one, let's just keep it simple, one son from one wife, one son from the other. No, I thought there's a Bechor. There's no Bechor for whatever reason. One wife brought in $1 million, one wife brought in $100,000. Now these two sons would divide that up equally by Yerusha Daraisa. And what does that do? It discourages fathers from giving their daughters nice dowries because fathers are afraid that someone else's children are going to be inheriting his money. So they institute a Ksubas Benin Dichrin, which means that as long as you have, if you have a sum total of the Ksubas that are promised to each wife, sum total of the dowries, on top of that total, there's one dinar of all this has to be land, or the dinar may not be, but the Ksubas Benin Dichrin, the Ksubas have to be land, then what we do is we give each set of children, they inherit their mother's ksuba, and then the rest of the property, which is really from the husband himself, is divided with the proper laws of Yerusha. If you don't have enough money to cover all the ksubas ben dichrin, you just follow Yerusha Daraisa. So that's ksubas ben dichrin. Ksubas, if he didn't write for her, benon nokbon, we usually have nukvon, benon nokbon, female daughters, di yehevyon lich minai, who will be to you from me, Inin yehavyon bibesi yosivan umitaznan minichsai, they will dwell in my house and be supported from my assets, ad di yisnasvan liguvrin, until they are married to men, chayev shehutznai beisdin. Do we have in our things oachati bagir? No, we don't. But Bagrus does the same thing. Okay, and then one more clause. V'at tehevyin yosvav v'desi, you will dwell in my house, in my estate, umitazna min nichsai, kol yomei, what's the next word?
Megar.
Megar armelusich, all the days of the duration of your widowhood, b'vesi, chayev shutnai beisdin. Now, the word megar is very strange. That's the word that stuck in my head from 11th grade of going over and over this Mishnah. But in the printed stuff, we have megad, which actually makes more sense. What does the word megad mean?
That you're called an almana?
No. Megad means the duration. It's from the Aramaic word nagad, which means to flow or to draw. Mishchu ukechu lachem tzom. What is mishchu? Negudu. Nagad means to draw or to flow. And if you were to translate that word into Hebrew, kol yemei meshech al menuseich. So where the resh came from, I don't know. How do you know that there's not just a chichik on the dalet missing. This is a good thing to know about medieval manuscripts. How do you know this must be a ratio, not just the badly written dalet?
Dalet written differently.
No. No, what's missing on top of it?
Oh, the
rafe.
Yeah.
In our text, for the most part, you only see a dagesh. You never see a rafe indicating there's no dagesh. Why? Because if there's no dot, there's no dagesh. Look in Reb Breuer's Chumash on the Aseres HaDibros, where you have, based on Tam Ayon, Tam HaTachton, the word chol in the Tam HaTachton is chol, in the Tam HaElyon, it's kol. How does he indicate both versions there? You see, when there are two nikudot, like lo tirtzach and lo tirtzach, he puts a kametz and a patach. But how do you indicate dagesh and no dagesh? So if you looked, it's the only place you'll see in Reb Breuer's Chumash. There's a dagesh, and there's a line on top that's called the rafeh. It means in manuscripts like Saviat Kaufman, you can never confuse a chaf with a vase, a resh with a dalid, and you can't confuse, there's one other thing that you can't confuse, because the rafeh will be missing. As it can't be a dalid that lost its guy, it's a resh. Yes, Gimel and Nun might be the other one. I think there's another one where you can't be confused because if it's a Beged Kefes, every Beged Kefes letter in this manuscript either has a Dagesh or a Rafe. What? No, I don't think so. Yehuda? What? Maybe. I don't remember, but that's a right. That would be, you'd expect that to be the case. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Now, that is really what I have to say about Ksuba. But I want to add at the end, perhaps the most important thing that comes out of this, Al Derech HaMusar, which is the last Mishnah. The end of the last Mishnah. Firstly, before I go, I just want to see what else did I want you guys to see here that I'm interested in. Okay. Firstly, this is Ksaviad Parma, which has slightly different vocalization. I'm not going to bother to read. Oh, here. Ksaviad Parma is a shortly thereafter direct descendant of Ksaviad Kaufman. But what's interesting here, if you can see it, I don't know. I can't really... I'll tell you what I can do. Hold on. I think... Oh, no, I don't have it here. It's in the...
Do control plus on that one.
Hold on. Can I?
Yeah, do control plus.
No. Control plus. Oh, that's the blow-up?
Yeah.
There we go. It's going to get blurry, but up here... If you see where the cursor is, right here, Uva Kohenes, Ahadrinoch Limdintich, you have the Hey Dalid Resh. Okay, that's why I wanted Ksavin Parma 138. And then I wanted to read to you something very briefly from the Babata archive. Babata was a woman of high society in the late 1st, early 2nd century in Judea. And in the Nachal Chever documents, not a Qumran, but the same sort of family of discoveries, in the Nachal Chever documents, we have several ksubas of her several marriages. And I wanted to just, I couldn't find the picture online, so I just wanted to read to you the English translation you can see here. Can I do this here, Control Plus?
Yeah.
On the 3rd of Adar in the consulship, whatever, that you will be my wife according to the law of Moses and the Judeans, and I will feed you and clothe you, and I will bring you my into my house by means of your ktub, and I owe you the sum of 400 denarii, which equal 100 tetradrachmas, whichever you wish to take and to from, together with the due amount of your food and your clothes and your bed, provisions fitting for a free woman, and so on and so forth. Now go down to the second paragraph. If you are taken captive, I will redeem you from my house and from my estate, and will take you back as my wife. And I owe you your ketubah money. And if I go to my eternal home before you, male children which you shall have by me will inherit your ketubah money beyond their share with their brothers. Female children shall dwell and be provided for from my house and from my estate until the time they will be married. And if I will go to my eternal home before you, you will dwell in my house and be provided for from my house and from my estate until the time that my heirs wish to give you your ketubah money. Sound familiar? Yeah, this is real live stuff. I remember as a graduate student encountering this for the first time, is like, cool! Okay, this is real. All right, not that you would think it isn't, but sometimes there's a difference between you just read it in the Mishnah, it's like, okay, yeah, interesting, you know, it's nice to hear, and you look and it's like, oh, really? They were doing this? Yeah, they were. Yes, there's a question.
Why is it that the heirs of the father have control over what happens to her while she's alive?
So I want to talk about that for a moment. The question is, what is the, this was the picture of it, okay. What is the, Chaim, you want to set the lights? Because we're done with that. I want to read the end of it. There's a machlokas between Anshe Yerushalayim and Anshe Yehuda when an almana lost her support from the estate. There are two possibilities. Either when she collects her ksuba, or when she gets married. The married part, we understand, that's her choice. However, the Mishnah says as follows. Kach hayu anshei Yerushalayim kosfin. Until, basically, all... as long as you're an almana, which means until she chooses to collect the ksuba. If she wants to continue living on the estate, she can do so. Anshe Galil ha-yukosfin ka-anshe Yerushalayim. Anshe the Galileans would write the same way. Anshe Yehuda ha-yukosfin at-she yurtsu ha-yorshim li-tein lach ksubsich. They flipped it around and said you can be supported until either she gets married or until the Yorshim want to give you the ksuba. Lefikach imratzu ha-yorshim nastun lach ksubasa pochunosa. You know, that was a question. What was agreed to in advance? What's most powerful about this Mishnah is a comment that the Gemara has, which is something that you should etch upon your hearts and take with you every day that you live and every time you have to make certain kinds of choices in life. The Gemara says that Anshe Golil Chasu al Kvodam Velo Chasu al Mamonam. Anshe Yehuda Chasu al Mamonam Velo Chasu al Kvodam. Anshe Yehuda cared more about their money than they did about their honor. Anshe Galil, like Anshe Yerushalayim, were more concerned about their reputation, their honor, their dignity, than they were about saving a few dollars. And I think that it is one of the most powerful mussars in life, that you should aspire to be like Anshe Yerushalayim and Anshe Galil in this regard, not Anshe Yehuda. That you will face times in life when you're not dealing with Isra Gezel versus not Gezel. It's not always a question of Gezel. But sometimes you have to make decisions about financial issues, and especially when they're smaller financial issues, where you have to really consider whether it's worth compromising your dignity, whether your kavod is worth that mammon. A true ben Torah, someone who has finer moral instincts, is just a finer person, understands that there's a line, there's a point, that even when you're entitled to something, even when by right you could insist upon something, you could write something in a business deal, in a contract, in a marriage or something like that, sometimes you have to understand that your kavod has to be worth more than the amount of money that's involved. You really want to aspire to be like Anshe Galil and Anshe Yerushalayim. You want to be chas, not al mamoncha, but chas al kvodcha. And that really is the tremendous mussar that emerges from this Mishnah. For those of you who are coming today, we look forward, which is God willing, most of you, we look forward to seeing you. There was call for 4:30. If you're taking the...